Ignition sequence start. 3, 2, 1. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. Liftoff on Apollo.
Welcome back to Pocket Science, everybody, the podcast where we're exploring the hard-hitting questions of Earth, existence, and the unknown. I'm AJ Perrin. With me this week, special guest, Nate Pinto.
Hey, what's up, AJ? It's good to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Today is a really awesome day, not only because we're in the studio, things are working properly, mics and cameras are working properly. I fixed the AC in my car. It's Friday. But also, it's possible that the best and worst days of our life are happening at the same moment.
Exactly.
So we're going to dive into that exact topic today, whether the past and future exist and what is the true nature of time. It's going to be a spicy episode.
I think our goal today is basically just to confuse the listeners as much as possible.
Well, I'm going to confuse myself without even trying, so I'm certain that these people will get confused as well. Don't let that deter you, though. Nate was here for our, if you remember, like one of the most listened to episodes and one of the most complex topics we've ever dove into. That was free will. Like, is that last fall or earlier this spring still? I think it was last fall.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to draw out that same like quality of conversation with you today.
I think I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. But of course, before we can get into that, we have to do our news and brain gains. Okay. First of all, I'd like to welcome everybody back to the show because it has been a good 6 weeks since we have recorded an episode, but I've been looking forward to this moment for a long time. Not only is this the very first episode as Pocket Science, that means brand new cover art. If you're listening on Spotify, that means you have this episode in video, which means Nate and I have to be super careful about our posture. We'll do every 5 minutes, we'll do posture checks. We've been planning this episode specifically for a while, so it's such a great one to like finally come back to. And hopefully we're on to a regular programming now for every 2 weeks, giving you guys more to listen to. Anyway, without further ado, let's jump into news. Nate, you want to go first?
Yeah, let's do it. So there's this U.S. startup company called Hermaeus, and they're working on this new high-speed jet. They're calling it the Quarter Horse. Its mission is it's going to be the world's first high-Mach autonomous aircraft.
Did you see the video I posted today, by the way, on Instagram?
I don't think I have. I'm a bad pocket science listener.
No, that doesn't make you a bad one. In honor of, I saw this was your news, I posted a video of the engine test.
Oh, perfect.
So it's pretty sweet. Anyway.
It's crazy how powerful it is.
Yeah.
But its goal is to go hypersonic. Now, that sounds like a cool word. What it means is Mach 5 or higher, which is insanely fast, faster than the speed of sound.
And a Mach is?
The speed of sound.
Yes.
So five times the speed of sound. So if I told you something and you were on this jet, you wouldn't hear it for five times the speed I would say it. I don't know. You wouldn't hear it. It would be,
if you're going faster than the speed of sound already, like you won't hear anything that happens behind you.
Yes.
Isn't that weird to think about actually?
So you're saying if you go away from an event when it happens,
mm-hmm.
You won't experience it. Well, that's.
Well, yeah, even with light, just like sound, if you could for some reason go faster than the speed of light and you look backwards, you wouldn't see anything.
Which is crazy. And almost some foreshadowing for what we're talking about.
Some foreshadowing.
The fourth prototype, they kind of have a plan for what they want to do with each prototype. The fourth one is difficult because they're working on a change on types of propulsion. They're going to have two. So the first one is going to be a turbine propulsion system, which will get it up to Mach 2.5. And then it will switch to a ramjet propulsion system, which the air is already so hot around it, it can just use that to power itself.
Yeah.
But what's really impressive is with how fast this will be going, the goal is for this jet to be able to take passengers from New York to Paris in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Which normally, if you get on a normal plane, assuming there's no delays and stuff with IT breakdowns like today. Have you heard of
what
that?
What was that? No.
Apparently Microsoft had...
News 1.5.
A massive shutdown.
Really? The stuff we use, or you mean just at their location?
No, like everywhere. Like.
Oh, wow. We use Microsoft at my work, and we were just fine, so.
Normally it would take 7.5 hours. For a flight, and this is only going to be 1.5.
I don't know about you. I hate waiting for anything. I feel like we've probably already talked about this before, not on the show, but just like, I hate waiting. I hate lines. I just feel like I can't do anything. I'd love to do something.
This is your average industrial engineer comment saying, yeah. I hate waiting.
Yeah.
I mean, naturally, it's true. I don't think anyone likes waiting, but.
We were talking about posture literally 2 minutes ago. It's like, look at other people when they're standing in a line using your phone. It'll never make you want to use your phone again. It's worse than that. It's like literally like neck down. And I'm like, this is why I look like that from the side, you know? So I'm actively pursuing lowering my experience in lines and when I'm in lines, not using my phone. But anyway, so yeah, quarter horse.
Yeah, so really exciting news. The goal is for this type of prototype to come out in 2025. So it should be coming somewhat soon. What about you?
Second piece of news. NASA just canceled a huge program. It's called the Viper program. It was supposed to go collect or go search for ice and water on the moon, South Pole region. And they hope to go there, find the water and ice, and try to piece together the history of like the Earth and the moon's interactions. But they canceled the program. Now, that's not new. Like, stuff like that has happened before. What hasn't happened is that they already built the rover for this program. $450 million spent, and then they canceled it.
Why would they cancel that?
Exactly. It took me so long to wrap my head around this, and I still don't know if I'm 100% like, this was a great call, guys. They were like, it saved us $84 million. Okay, so about 20% of the initial costs, right? The lander that was going to take this rover to the moon was a private company. And I don't know if it's because of the contract or something. NASA is still going to be paying this company to send their lander to the moon without the rover on it.
Wait.
And so do you know how much they're paying the company? $350 million.
What?
So now, or maybe 320. So now we're at like almost $800 million total for this project without even getting this rover to the moon.
So they're sending it to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
To not get the information they want.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I read the NASA article because I heard about it on like a New York Times article or Forbes or something. And they're like trying to clickbait the information that NASA sent out, right? Because NASA has an article as well talking about why they canceled the program. So I read that. They said basically there are multiple missions within this program called the CLPS. I think it's commercial landing something something. I don't know. Basically like the stretch of missions to take a lot of commercial landers and commercial technology accompanied by NASA stuff to the moon over the next several years. Of all the ones we're going to do, like this will provide the least value. So if we're going to have to cancel something, let's cancel this one. And the benefit they get is they can tear apart all of the equipment on board the rover and reuse it into other missions. Oh, so they can still kind of get that equipment up there. They just kind of parsed it down from, let's say it was five missions to four missions, and going to try to include that equipment as much as possible.
That makes sense. It's still peculiar to me if you already went so far, but I'm sure they have their cost justifications.
Second piece of news, a Stegosaurus skeleton was sold at auction for $45 million.
Whoa.
It's supposedly like the most complete, not just Stegosaurus fossil, but fossil ever. It was sold to Citadel's CEO, whose name is Ken Griffin. He owns a market-making firm. That's what Citadel is, a market-making firm. I don't know what that is. It sounds like play with money and make more money out of it somehow. Anyway, so this guy's got way too much money. He bought this Stegosaurus skeleton. Good news is he's going to be loaning it out periodically to institutions in the United States. So I don't know if that means like it's like the Smithsonian or something like that. So we'll get Night of the Museum 5 or whatever with the Stegosaurus included. The funny quote, though, from this whole thing is he said, blank, I forget the name of this fossil, was born in America and it will stay in America.
Word.
You know what's funny about that, though? Stegosaurus has lived almost 150 million years ago. You know what the Earth looked like 150 million years ago? Not like it does today. Sorry to break it to you, Ken, but the North American continent had barely started to separate from Pangaea as we know it at this time. So also, I'd like to inform you that the Declaration of Independence was not written at that time. So America was not even a country, or at least I'm guessing he used America to represent the United States of America, not just like North America. Last piece of news, we discovered a cave on the moon. People have been expecting there to be caves on the moon for decades. However, we just proved it for the first time using radar technology. So we basically, it's like a finding, it's looking through solids and finding the caverns within. And so they spotted this, there's a 200 meter deep pit. And then at the bottom of the pit coming out in different directions are these cave systems.
Whoa.
That are like the length of a football field sometimes, stuff like that. And they were saying like, these are perfect for moon bases because you have to build less structure to protect astronauts from radiation because they're automatically underground.
Oh.
But you know what structure you do have to build?
A door?
A giant elevator.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's still insane. 200 meters down. Like, okay, great. Do you know what 200 meters looks like, dude?
Would you take fall damage, though? Okay, if you think
on the moon. Could you just jump down? But you could,
probably not that much.
You could Oh, because you'll accelerate.
Yeah, but still.
Dang.
Not 200 meters, though.
I wonder if just with a jetpack alone, though, you could jump and just kind of like flutter the engines to keep reducing your speed.
Probably.
You know?
Yeah.
You couldn't do a parachute because there's no atmosphere.
You're right.
So we're all going to be cave dwellers when we finally get to the moon. But mm-hmm. Now I think it's about time to talk about time. Is that right? Oh, just kidding. Man, you can tell how long it's been since I've been on the show. We got to do brain games. Nate, hit me.
Hit you?
Educationally, please.
There you go.
I prefer an educational punch now and then.
All right, get ready for this educational punch.
Okay.
A little precursor to it is I need to explain or remind people of Einstein's theory of relativity, which is also a precursor for important things we'll talk about throughout this episode.
Cool.
Everything is relative. So time for me will not necessarily be time for you, depending on, you know, where you are
right
in the universe. Speed of light is the only thing that's not relative. It stays constant. I believe it's 300
millimeters a second.
300 million
yeah, meters a second. Yeah, 3 times 10 to the eighth.
The speed of light is not relative. So if you go faster, you will still experience light at 300,000,
yeah.
300 million meters per second.
Right. No matter how fast you move, light moves this the same for you.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the idea with that is the faster you go, for light to still be going that fast, time would need to slow down for you. So you would experience time slower the faster you go. That's essentially what it is. The faster you're going, the slower you're experiencing time. So that's Einstein's theory of relativity. He basically says space and time are heavily correlated.
Yeah.
So my brain gain is there's this physicist named Richard Muller, and he's a physicist at Berkeley. He basically theoreticized that with space-time.
You said it again, bro. Theoreticized.
I'm making it a word. I'm going to patent that, and all then right. People
so
are going to use it.
We theoreticized that.
We theoreticized that the more space you have, the more time you have. The universe is constantly expanding. There's more uh-huh. space. Uh-huh. So as space is growing and progressing, time is progressing. So as the universe expands, time moves forward. So if what
I
if,
think I see where you're going. Keep going. Keep
so
going.
Like, what if the universe were to slow down in expanding? Would time slow down? If the universe started to contract back in on itself, would we go backwards in time?
And the crazy part is, too, how would you know? Because locally, the time for you feels like it's remaining the same. It's when you look out into like the outer sphere, not moving as fast as you or not whatever, that you see the difference.
Yes.
But always in your local sphere does it feel and look normal.
Yeah, basically he tried to theoreticize this
that's still wrong. Anyway, I'm gonna let you slide on that one.
With orbiting black holes, so if they were to uh-huh. orbit each other, as they get closer and closer, they'll eventually combine and create one black hole.
Yeah.
And there's a point, there's a slight little shimmer where there's a slight time addition because new space is being created as these black holes merge.
Uh-huh.
And so there's an incremental amount of time added. So if that's true, this more space equals more time theory has a lot more gravitation to it. No
I like
pun
the
intended.
Pun at the end. Yo, okay. I love that.
Well, what's your brain game, AJ? What'd you learn this
I've
week?
Got two. And what's funny is, so I always keep a list on my phone of like fun facts and stuff. And the nice part about brain gains is, you know, when I post stuff on our Instagram, it's always trying to be related to the themes we talk about, space, technology, aerospace, whatever. But I love brain gains because it's an opportunity to say anything that I've learned about anything. I was actually trying to parse down this list and came across this fact, and I was like, I could probably get rid of this until I looked it up to fact check it. And then there was an additional fact added to it. It was about to be in the trash, and now it's our actual brain game. Okay, listen to this. There are three men who coincidentally died on the same day. Not crazy. If we look back in history, there's only 365 days in a year. Like, of course, people it's going to overlap. But these three men happen to be Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and James Monroe.
What?
Right? Three famous people in our history. However, that's not the crazy fact. What day did they die on, Nate?
Dude, I couldn't tell you.
Think about it. Think about it. America, founding fathers, the day of the year.
July 4th.
Yes.
Actually?
They all died on the 4th of July. And so that was the original fact. I was like, I could probably find something better than that. That's very unlikely. Like, really, really unlikely. It gets crazier because two of them died on the same 4th of July, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. However, let's add another layer to this. Thomas Jefferson died on July 4th, 1826, 5 hours before John Adams. John Adams died on July 4th, 1826, at the age of 90, 5 hours after his friend Thomas Jefferson. Adams' last words were famously, "Thomas Jefferson survives," but he was unaware of Jefferson's death. So Thomas Jefferson was already dead, and he's like, "Oh, you know what? I can die in peace. Thomas Jefferson survives." But he was dead at that point. Anyway, we'll get into the main topic, but I have one more brain gain because this one is interactive, and I just thought you'd like it.
All right, I'm down.
I need you to do something. I'm going to tell you the instructions really fast. I need you to just do it.
Dude, okay? I'm scared.
No, okay. It's not like anything crazy. It's going to use your hands, okay?
Okay.
You're going to snap 5 times fast and then draw a capital E on your forehead. Go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Nice. Okay.
Did I pass?
Yeah, technically you added a fourth line to your E, like sideways, but I'll let that slide. So the reason I had you do that is because I've been reading a book by a guy named Daniel Pink, which is called To Sell as Human. I talked to you about this one.
Yeah.
I got to a point in the book where he was talking about empathy.
Right, because if you're just in opposition, no one's going to listen to you.
Right. So that test right there I had to do is something called perspective taking. So even though I distracted you with the snapping, right, mm-hmm. that's to get you out of like your long-term or short-term memory bubble, whatever, and just get you thinking in the moment. And then what you do afterwards with the capital E is what's really important. So when you drew your E, oh my gosh, now I can't even remember.
So are you not empathizing with me right now?
Oh, you suck, bro.
Okay. So, did I disprove your theory?
So no, you, well, no. So if you do the E, so to me, it looks backwards. That's showing that you are bad at taking other people's perspective, because when I told you to draw an E, you drew an E for you, but not an E for me, even though I was the one asking for it. Now, so I'm going to show you what I mean. So if I draw it like this.
That's how you draw your E's? First off, sorry. That's
yeah, it's backwards for you.
Yeah.
If I drew it like this, it'd be forward for you.
Yeah.
So people who, even when distracted, will still draw the E towards the other person, that means they're better at empathizing with them. You, my friend, are not. No, because you did it backwards.
Oh, I'm selfish.
At least the second time where you repeated yourself, you did. I don't know why I immediately forgot it, but I think you did it backwards when you originally did it,
really?
Which is bad. But anyway, what's funny is I was on vacation like a couple weeks ago with my family. There's like 12 of us there. And I kind of one morning was just having people do this as they came down the stairs, just kind of trying to catch them off guard. And it was all kind of funny because once somebody does it and they understand like what's going on, they want to watch the next person come down and see what happens. And we noticed a trend, which was that dudes tended to do this more. Every single dude did it backwards. Like they could not empathize. Now that's not to say that there weren't any girls that also did it backwards, but we didn't have a single guy who, you know, did it the right way. Granted, that's a very low sample size, but anyway, so you could try that test with your friends to understand which of your friends are highly empathetic and which ones are good at taking people's perspective and possibly even better at selling ideas. So there you go.
So we learned that I'm self-centered, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Fair enough. Anyway, I don't even know how long we've been talking, but I think it's about time we take a quick break and then jump into our main topic.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we're back from the break, which really wasn't even a break. We started immediately talking about the subject, so.
Yeah, we're just productive like that.
All right, so yeah, we're going to jump into the nature of time. Our goal for this episode is to understand like the main theories about how time exists within our universe, what its function is, and whether or not these things that we call the past and the future actually exist.
I think a lot of people have had the thought in their life where they're like, what's right now? Like, we decided to make it up. Is it actually happening?
Yeah.
Is there a future? Angel, what's the first view we're going to look at?
The first thing that comes to mind is the way most people think about time. And honestly, the way that I think about time on a daily basis. And I would argue probably also the way you think about time on a daily basis, which is something called presentism. What has happened, happened, and no longer exists. What will happen has not yet happened and has yet to be written. And we live in this moment, in this bubble called the now. And we kind of define what that time is. We just say this is now. Humans, regardless of if you would consider yourself a presentist or not, right? Humans have an innate ability to timekeep, and like animals in nature as well are very good at keeping time. For example, if you get used to a sleep schedule, you're going to wake up at the same time every day. Bees know when to pollinate or make their honey or whatever. There's a lot of studies about bees and timekeeping for some reason. Animal mating seasons, it's just you know what it is in your brain. And if I told you right now, like count to five, you could probably get reasonably close to what you think 5 seconds is because you have that sense built into your internal clock.
Right. This is a very Newtonian style of thinking. And
which would mean what? Like, what do you call Newtonian?
What are we experiencing? Just like Newton would talk about forces, you experience a force. Mm-hmm. What are we experiencing and what is our observation from our own perspective?
Everything is a cause and effect from one thing to the next. And so you're living within that cause and effect chain, just riding that wave. Right.
Only what happens now exists. So once an event happens, the past is erased and the future has not yet happened. So you eating breakfast this morning doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Anymore. It just doesn't.
So I've got a question for you. Do you think that presentism is a legit way to look at time? How does that feel for you?
So from my point of view, there is only the present. And so if you ignore the idea that your opinion matters or any other observer in the universe, if you're disregarding that, which oftentimes if you disregard an assumption, that's
you're probably not riding the right assumption train.
Exactly.
Yeah. A lot of physicists would disagree with presentism, including our friend Albert Einstein that you were talking about earlier. And that's because of something that Einstein dubbed loss of simultaneity? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Loss of simultaneity. Anyway, what that means is, like Nate was saying, if you go other places in the universe, what is now changes. And that's because light has a finite speed.
Exactly.
Now, when we go to different points in the universe, that now is going to change. Some physicists would call it a light cone, or basically everything that has reached you up to that point is defining your present.
Yes. The idea that I like, that helps me comprehend it, is we're familiar if the sun were to burn out right now, we wouldn't experience or see that for 8 minutes because that's how far it takes for the light to travel.
Right.
So that event hasn't happened for us yet. So the now from the sun would be no sun.
Yeah, it hasn't. Yeah, the now for the sun. But for our local universe, it's like until we feel the loss of heat or see the sun go out, it doesn't even matter what has happened outside of our local sphere. There's no way for it to impact what we call the present.
Exactly. So now would be defined differently depending on where you're looking. So it kind of disproves this idea of only now exists because now can be different.
I said the loss of simultaneity. I want to give you an example besides the like far off into the universe, because the loss of simultaneity has more to do with motion than it does with place in the universe. Let's talk about like you're on a small remote island, okay?
Okay.
This island is a very long shape, just kind of like, it almost looks like a stick. This is very coincidental. You happen to be standing in the middle of the island in the middle of a thunderstorm, and two bolts of lightning hit either tip of the island, essentially. So equidistant from you, the lightning strikes the ground. To you, these bolts of lightning happened at the exact same time. Also coincidentally, you have a plane flying overhead right above you, directly above you, flying in the direction from one lightning bolt to the next. When these lightning bolts strike, the plane will perceive this as one happening before the other because it's going towards the light of another and going away from the light of the other lightning strike.
Gotcha.
So what that tells us is that we cannot determine which of us or which now was less legit. In Einstein's theory of relativity, all observers have an equal legitness in terms of their present moments. And so the problem we come up with is that we can't define a universal now.
So that idea of presentism, while very feasible, and it seems like that's how we interpret things, if we're going to take into consideration that every single person has an equally valid vantage or viewpoint, then we have to kind of disregard presentism and look at what are our other options now. And that brings us to, instead of thinking there's only now, what if we look at everything exists?
That theory is called eternalism, thinking that all of time and space exists all at once. The way that physicists like to imagine eternalism is with something they call the block universe. Like, there's a lot of analogies we could use I don't know what your favorite is, Nate, but the block universe is kind of the one that is like the most widely used. Think about your life like a flip book. So every now is stacked on top of each other, like pages within this flip book. And it makes sense when you flip this flip book from the front to the back, you see that story unfold.
Like page by page.
Exactly. And so the idea in eternalism is that when the universe was created, just like all of space and all the matter within space and all the energy within space was created, so too was the time into one giant block universe. What's your thought, Nate?
The way I like to almost view it is like one of those old-fashioned cinema, like movie strips. It's just where are you at in the movie. Mm-hmm. So just like if we were to both watch Interstellar, but you watch it 2 minutes after me, that doesn't mean that the movie isn't a full movie. It's I'm just experiencing a different point than you are.
You might originally think that, okay, if the whole universe is a flip book, isn't there one page that we do define as like what's happening right now? The problem is, like what you said, Nate, I might be a little bit in the quote-unquote past, and you might be a little living in a little bit the quote-unquote future, and that's because your position and your velocity within the universe changes essentially the angle of your page. That goes back to what we said earlier, which is you can't define this universal now because everybody's page is different.
Let's say there's this alien in galaxy far, far away who's mm-hmm. biking.
Right.
If he's biking towards
planet Earth.
Let's say towards Earth.
Yeah.
Let's say an event happens. Let's say the sun goes out. Let's just use that.
No, let's do something more us included. Let's say
okay, let's high five.
We graduate.
Or we graduate. Okay, yeah. Sure. That's more interesting than a high five. Uh-huh. That's fine. Okay. So we graduate, and actually I'm gonna start with this alien biking away from
Yeah, Earth. Let's start there.
So we high five. Or no, we graduate. We're graduating.
Pause, people. There's an alien really far away in a distant, distant, distant galaxy. Meanwhile, Nate and I are graduating on Earth, and this alien begins to bike away from the direction of Earth.
Yes.
Continue.
Thank you. So
I knew where you were going.
Thank you. Yeah. You can read my mind. So this event, us graduating, becomes a reality for the whole entire universe, but it only becomes a reality at the speed of light going right. outwards from Earth.
Right.
So an alien biking away would experience this event later than
a person standing still.
Than a
at
person
the same
standing
planet.
Still. Yes. Yeah. So because you're moving away from the event as it happens, you're going to experience it later. Alternatively, if the alien bikes towards Earth and we graduate, it's going to see us graduating earlier. At the way that it's biking and how you were talking about that angle of the page.
Yeah.
Given enough distance, an alien biking away, even, you know, at 30 miles per hour, which is pretty fast for a bike. But
that's insane, bro.
It maybe we would be in our diapers.
Yeah. The page changes its angle if you're moving, right? I don't know if I was super clear about that, but that's the idea in the block universe is that if we're all on this flat page, we all have different spots on this page and angles of the page depending on our motion. Now, even at a slight tilt of this page, we're talking about the size of the entire universe. So you follow this angle downwards and they start to reach into our distant, distant past, like you're saying, mm-hmm. back when we were born in our diapers.
Exactly.
We weren't born in diapers, but we were born and got into a diaper. By ourselves, mind you. We crawled into it and did it ourselves.
Because we're self-sufficient. We're yeah. go-getters. Yeah. Exactly.
However, what would happen if the alien is biking towards Earth?
So here's where it gets tricky. If the alien were biking towards Earth, mm-hmm. that means events would hit the alien before or sooner, quote unquote, than someone standing still at that alien's galaxy,
mm-hmm.
which means given enough space and given enough speed with that angle you were talking about in the other direction, the alien would see us dead, basically, like us exactly. at our grave.
Yep. So for you and me, we're sitting across the table from one another. If I start walking towards you, I do not see into the distant future. And the same thing, if I start backpedaling, I'm not going to see into your distant past.
Right.
You need to be at those incredible distances within the universe to see what this effect or see this effect take place. It's something called the relativistic Doppler effect. There's another, should we do the alien high-fiving example just really quick?
Yeah,
I think I can knock it out.
So worst case, you can edit out what we don't need.
Right. Imagine Nate and I are walking down the street towards each other. When we reach each other, also, we're like blatantly ripping off some BBC video right now. So like shout out to blank BBC video, you know, was it BBC? I
feel yeah.
like, yeah. Okay.
It was BBC.
So walking towards each other, we're going to high five when we see each other.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, not yet.
Oh, yeah.
Hold off. I got to keep scenario setting.
All right, fair enough.
So in the Andromeda Galaxy, there are these aliens really far away that are planning to invade our planet, okay? In that alien universe, it is like Judgment Day. They're going to decide. Today is the day they are going to vote to decide if they...
Invade our
planet, exactly. Nate, you are walking towards the Andromeda Galaxy, and I'm walking away from the Andromeda Galaxy. Okay? Mm-hmm. And now we're reaching each other, and high five.
It's a good high five.
Was it? I thought it was kind of bad.
We didn't get like the... We
can try again. There we go. Anyway, so Nate was walking towards the Andromeda Galaxy when that high five happened. Even though we're at the exact same position in space, because his page is angled because of his motion towards the Andromeda Galaxy, he is seeing into the future, and he's seeing that the Andromeda Galaxy aliens are now departing and going towards Earth. Conversely, I am moving away from the Andromeda Galaxy. I am seeing the aliens deciding to come to a vote in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So before this vote is even going to take place, even though we're basically at the exact same position in space. That's how great of an effect this relativistic Doppler effect has at great distances. I tried to dig into the math of this effect a little bit. Light has a certain number of waves per second, the frequency, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're moving towards incoming light, you're increasing the frequency of the light. Now, if you have 2.5 million years worth of light, like that's the distance between Andromeda Galaxy and Earth,
mm-hmm.
2.5 million light years, increasing the frequency of that light, that makes a big difference. So just the teeny tiny extra waves you see a second at those great distances is going to, it makes a big difference.
Which is crazy to think about, but it only shows that your speed can really change compared to somewhere else in the universe. You're now,
yeah.
Which means that there is no now.
Exactly. It continues to like prove to us that there's no universal now. Let me just read off what I have here in my notes so I capture this correctly. So in an eternalist universe, you don't just measure the time between events, since this is subjective based on location and velocity. Instead, you measure the space-time between, and the space-time between events is the same for all observers. So there's this thing called the invariant, the space-time interval, or often called the invariant interval, and there's actual math to show that depending on how you're moving, where you are, and how much time actually passes between you and an event, you can use those variables to calculate the space-time in between you and an event, and that's the same no matter where you are. It may not have a definite time where it happened, because we kind of invented the idea of time. It's our human understanding of what did happen, what is happening, and what will happen.
Right.
But within the block universe theory, events have a definite space-time where they took place. I'm going to put a cap on the block universe theory. There's a different theory of time. It's not presentism. It's not eternalism. Something called the classical moving spotlight theory.
Yes. And so this one is a little more, I'll say, sketchy. It kind of combines some presentism, some eternalism mindset. So basically it says past, present, and future, they all exist at the same time.
So just like eternalism in that sense.
Yes. They also say that there is a defined present, and it's not a matter of perspective, which is a little peculiar.
They're saying there is a universal present.
Yes, yeah. There's a universal present, but the past, present, and future all exist, but we experience the present. Like, there's an absolute present.
Yeah.
What matters is which time is being highlighted. So just like a spotlight, if you had, let's say at a school play, you had a ton of students line up,
mm-hmm.
and it's all dark. You could represent each of them as a moment in time. And whichever you point the spotlight to, as you go from student to student, left to right, let's say.
Yeah.
That's kind of what is now.
Yeah.
They all exist.
But they're not in the spotlight.
Right. And so the idea is like, right now, right here, is the spotlight, which I think is kind of like, oh, that's nice to believe, but I think...
It's kind of like cute. It's like, oh, that yeah. was a nice attempt to understand time.
It's cool, it's comforting, but we kind of have discovered that, or we've talked about that, the universal now is kind of complex to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess... Just briefly touching on that. Now let's get into what do we see as the most prevalent, most
feasible, or at least most comfortable
yes.
idea with time. So we explained the block universe theory.
Sorry, which is eternalism, by
yeah,
the way.
Which is eternalism, yeah. Right. But that all revolves around the idea that all of time and space are created at the exact same time during the Big Bang. That's what Einstein believed. He said all of time and space were created, not just all of space, but all of time as well. But what if this wasn't true? That's what leads us to what we call the growing block theory, which is to say that the block universe grows as we go. So the block is getting bigger as time goes on. So as to say, there's no way to define the universal now. True, within the bounds of our experience in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that there isn't some definition within space-time of a universal now.
Right.
So there's this, you can kind of envision, if we go back to the flipbook example, right? Stack your flipbook. It's pretty high. It's like a couple post-it note things stacked on top of each other. Turn it to jello, okay? Now the top of it is kind of smushy and malleable. The wavy top part represents all of the nows in the universe. In the next step, the next growth of that block is written by the decisions of essentially the random particles within the universe. So we go back to the idea of saying we can't predict everything in the universe, so and really anything could happen.
Right.
I was listening to like Brian Cox and a couple other physicists talk about this on a show, and one of the physicists was like, this is what I believe in the growing block because like it makes me believe that I'm in control, but still reminds me that what I've done in the past remains in the universe like forever. All the things you regret like are permanent within the universe, but you're still riding that front edge of time essentially, and the universe has not yet decided what it wants to do with that.
So with the idea of this growing block, the past exists somewhere, but it's not here.
Right.
But then that makes you wonder, okay, well, if we're following this, like, what about the future? The cool thing is, and also confusing, is quantum mechanics actually helps to define this. Quantum mechanics, when you get down to that small of an atomic level,
yep,
basically says that anything that is not observed yet is considered to be indetermined.
Yeah.
And so the future can be unknown because it has not been observed, because there is intrinsically random things
within the quantum
right.
world.
For example, an electron position until yeah. you look at it.
I always kind of was curious though about like how much impact can those random particles have on like the macro scale of things, like you and me and the events that happen in our life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the answer to that. I just think it's strange that we use the argument of, well, quantum mechanics is random to say that the universe could be random as well.
Is it essentially just constantly, because it's small, it constantly adds up until it's on a macro scale?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So like, even though there's small changes at a random level, it's like it can have a big impact because there's so many
yes.
particles. You know how sometimes you're talking and after the fact you're like, why did I say that? You know what I'm saying?
Too many times.
You feel like you're not even in control. I feel on this podcast all the time. The listeners might not get it as much because I delete that stuff like nobody's business. I'm my biggest critic on what I actually let get to the like quote unquote final take. But I think that whole experience of feeling like, why did I say that? Or like you ever feel like you're riding in your own backseat?
Yeah.
And people will say, oh, you're just on autopilot. You're just like you snap out of it and now you're back in the driver's seat. But I'm like, there is a very gray line between when you're quote unquote in control and when you're in the back seat choosing. I don't feel in control of when that switch happens. You know what I'm saying?
Which I think dives into kind of more that like neurology, like your, when does your, like, what's the word? Your subconscious kind of kick in versus
yeah.
your conscious and you're actively choosing yeah. or you get, it's like a blur. Sometimes like when you're talking, it's just go and you could be thinking about something else and your
yes.
lips are just moving. So this idea of how that's working kind of dives into you're saying that there might be some implications of how we view this time thing on free will.
I just want to say one more thing about the growing block theory before we run away from it. Otherwise, I'll forget and I'll never get this chance again. Einstein said that all of space and time was created at once, mm-hmm. right? Just because I'm going to kind of read off my notes here because I think I got it to a T, but it only makes sense if I read it. The dimension of time, what we call the fourth dimension, can only be experienced from our perspective. It can only be experienced in one way, the way that it's fed to us, right? This forward wave. There's no way for us to say if at the higher level in the fourth dimension, if time exists as one unit or as a growing unit, right?
Right.
If the universe can expand and create more empty space, why couldn't time, a fourth dimension, also be infinite, if we can have a third dimension that's infinite, you know what I'm saying? And if time is infinite, there is, yes, maybe a definite start to the universe, but there's no way to say time couldn't be constantly being added to.
Interesting, which is an interesting claim, because if you say, well, time is infinite because the universe is infinite,
mm-hmm.
well, that quite literally applies both ways. You would have to say it goes infinitely the other way, but we know that the universe had a start, like time, space-time.
Yeah, there was a definite start.
Yeah.
There's a definite start, because we can see it. The answer to this question we're asking is whether or not time is infinite depends on what happens to the universe's expansion.
Mm.
Go back and listen to the Dark Matter, Dark Energy episode. We talked about the crisis in cosmology, or whatever physicists call it, basically to say what's going to happen at the end of the universe. Like, how is the universe going to end? If it collapses in on itself, we have a definite end to the universe. And we've just proved that time has a definite end as well. Because if all space-time is created when the universe began, all space-time ends when the universe is demolished into itself. So if space continues to expand, then that's where we say, okay, time is infinite, because the universe itself, whether humans die or not, will continue to exist. It was born and will continue forever.
Interesting.
Honestly, I've been kind of waiting for the meat of the episode to like fall onto my plate, and I think that's like, I think that was it for me.
AJ's eating it up now.
Yeah. You want to go to free will, though. I think we should talk about free will.
Yeah, let's hear. What are your thoughts on, so if there's eternalism, well, then the whole entire timeline of time is written out. So, for example, it was always determined that you're going to miss the bus. The future is undetermined. Mm-hmm. So if it's undetermined, that means we can make choices. So what are your thoughts on how that affects our free will?
So I actually like what you said. I've changed my mind since even the start of this episode, because you said the buildup of all these intrinsically random quantum states has a marked impact on the macro scale of things. Also, nobody knows the answer to why the universe has this randomness embedded within it.
Right.
Do you know the name of the guy from PBS Spacetime? His name's Matt O'Dowd. He was like, if you want to believe that free will exists, you have to believe that every single possible universe persists into the future. So you can almost think of the universe, I wrote it down here, as not just one flip book, but a mirage of infinite flip books stacked on top of one another. And what the future actually holds for your observation is unknowable until you turn that page. Just kind of like a little mic drop there. It's like, it's not to say that there is one block universe. We see and experience one block universe, because like you said, when you make an observation, that random particle becomes or has a finite location, right?
Mm, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that outside of what we can observe with our human eyes as the light reaches us, that doesn't mean that within the same universe we're existing in, every other possible universe is layered on top of one another.
Let me see if I understand this right. I'm going to try. I love analogies, so I'm going to try to come up with an analogy for this.
Mm-hmm.
So the future would be an unzipped zipper that you don't know how far apart it is. There's a lot of possibilities, let's say, and then maybe there's a chance the zipper gets caught or something. And so mm-hmm. kind of how you choose to zip it can affect what the future becomes. Maybe that's not the right analogy.
I appreciate you trying to come up with an analogy on the spot.
Hey, it was a tough effort.
I've got a question for you. So it's funny that you came on, and by the end of the episode, we're talking about free will again.
The exact same episode, basically.
If you look around you, there are traces of the past everywhere embedded within our universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, ice melting is showing that at one point it was colder and now it's got hotter.
Okay. Yeah.
Or like the paint you put on your wall is a mark of the event that happened in the past. However, there are no traces of, or this is my question to you, are there traces of the future embedded within the present? Because if everything is supposed to be existing at once, why does it only feel like the past is existing?
I like that. Actually, that might like cement my view, because if they exist, generally you can see some type of trace. Now, it may not be the most obvious trace.
No.
That's interesting though. I like that thought.
It's like the present is built on the foundation of the past, but like what is to how is the future also embedded in the present, you know? And
like
we
that.
Use present loosely, cuz we've kind of decided, like, you can't decide how big of a slice the present actually is. So to say the present is kind of loose. Nate, I think I want to open it up now to, like, the final thoughts
Yeah,
section. I think that's a good think we're at that time right now.
It's about that time. I think the answer comes down to the idea of cosmic democracy. So if all perspectives and observers in the universe are equally valid, presentism is proven false. You could say how, for example, let's say mass, right? We have a certain, I don't know where it is specifically, but there's a certain object where it is the definition of a 1 kilogram. Mm-hmm. And we can reference that. Anything else may be slightly off, but we have one point to reference it. So basically, if we can come up with a certain point that we're going to say, hey, this is where we analyze time, like a center of the universe. And
yeah, the reference.
Yeah, so maybe we pick one person that we reference. Let's say it's me. Let's say I'm the center of the universe.
Yeah, okay. This is a great, actually. I'm going to send this to every like job application or every place you'll ever apply in your life. Is just an out-of-context clip of you calling yourself the center of the universe.
I'll be the reference. Everything revolves around me and how fast I'm moving and how I experience things is the definition of now.
Thanks for taking that burden for us.
You know, it's a tough job, but I guess I can take it.
As I research for this episode, I continue to think about life and death, as you probably did.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, it's supposedly, we're supposed to say the end of the beginning is like all here right now. Einstein actually used this idea in a letter to his late friend's wife, essentially, who was grieving over the loss of her husband. He essentially said something along the lines of his entire experience here in the universe as we speak, continues to exist as we speak. So just because we're past that point of time doesn't mean he's not just over the next hill.
So like someone, however far away and however many galaxies away, that event, like his existence is still existing.
Embedding in the universe. Yeah, continues to embed itself as it.
That's comforting.
Yeah, I know. But I also think Einstein just was down bad for whoever this was. He was like, I can't handle you. Like, you need to get over it. Okay. He's fine. Okay. If he was here, he'd tell you right now that you should be with me. Okay. That's what he'd say.
He was down bad.
Okay. I got one more thought, which is actually I accumulated on the car ride here. Or I was watching a video. Shouldn't say that. I was listening to a YouTube video in the car about like why we experience time in a forward motion. So we bounced back and forth this episode. We said, perhaps time is just the present and that's all there is. Perhaps time is everything. Perhaps time is just the past and present and we're building the future as we speak. But why in all those viewpoints do humans at least have this very finite or definite direction of time? The answer lies within entropy, which was a topic we had a long time ago, a fan favorite episode, I guess. We define entropy as time's arrow. So low entropy is the start of the universe and high entropy is the end.
Okay.
But what if there was a universe where that was reversed? So entropy starts high and goes low. You know why that could never exist is because if, and this relies on an if, but if the time and space is infinite, then no matter what point of entropy you start at, the entropy will always be lower than... The entropy could never be at the max. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No matter what entropy you start at, you have a low entropy.
Whoa, wait.
Also, entropy is based off of randomness. It's based off of probability. It's to say that we trend towards disorder because there are more disorderly states than orderly states. Go listen to our episode. It'll make more sense.
Basically, entropy is like a five-year-old kid on a ton of sugar in a room with a ton of neatly stacked blocks.
Exactly. So it's logical that that five-year-old kid would move these blocks around and bring disorder into the room. Just like entropy in our universe is logical. It's based off of probability. It's the most likely scenario. And over time, with enough observations, the most likely scenario is constantly going to be what is brought about. Go back to the question of why are humans experiencing time in a forward direction? It's because entropy, as described by some physicists, can be thought of as information. As we build more memories within our mind, we are creating more and more information, storing more entropy within our own brains. So even if our human lifetime is all existing all at once within the universe, right? The only way our brain will ever be able to make sense of it is by continuing to read from the low to high entropy state. As you move backward in time, your brain would be losing entropy. The memories build from point A to point B. Now, let's say we start at point B and move towards point A. As you move from point B to point A, that's high entropy to low entropy, you're losing entropy, aka losing memories of what just happened. So you can't have memories going back in time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you move
yeah.
in the opposite direction in time, you can't build memories because of entropy.
So memories are disorder in our brain, is what you're saying.
An empty brain at the start of your life and a full brain at the end of your life. Mm-hmm. One of them is low in entropy, the empty brain, and one of them is high in entropy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so if you were to move from the high entropy to the low, even if that were possible, you would be removing memories and removing disorder. And so you couldn't even remember going from the future to the past. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right now, as we're sitting here, we are just experiencing the logical system of entropy playing out within our memories that are stored in our brain.
Dude, I got to like digest that.
Does that make sense? Anybody takes away one thing from this episode, it was just by chance that I was happened to be like listening to that video on my ride here. It's that regardless of if we feel like it's going from the past to the future, it's because that's the only way our brain can make it make sense.
Just like how now, if we're going from the past to the future, we're gaining more disorder. You don't know what that disorder in your brain, there's no sign of what it will be because it's just going to become more disorderly.
Exactly.
That's crazy. I wonder what the implications are on then how fast you travel and how you experience time and how that would affect it and memories. But I don't know.
I personally burnt myself out trying to say that, so I couldn't even try to think about that if I wanted to right now.
That is great. That's like I'm like walking away. I gotta digest that. Okay, another thought that I had. We define now as, or we define, let's say, not now, because I think if anything, we've lost our definition of now.
We've lost somewhere along this episode. We've lost what that means.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's just say an event occurs. We're saying that that event becomes a reality. Outwardly at the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
Do we only consider events to happen when we can physically see them?
If nothing can move faster than the speed of light, it doesn't encode itself in the universe for your local sphere. So it's like the sun example you brought up earlier.
I think oftentimes we say we see this event happening. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's how technically, if we're going to be technical about it, we shouldn't say that only because it's not necessarily that we're seeing it. It's more that we're feeling the effects.
I don't really know what to think anymore other than... we're out of time.
Well, presentists would say we're out of time.
It's time for listener shout out. Let's jump to our good friend Adele in Slovakia. We already read her listener shout out twice, actually, in that unreleased re-recorded episode. She says, hello, I remember especially when you said something at the same time. I laughed out loud and it made me look kind of insane because I had my headphones in. But what can you do when you feel like you are in one room with these two people? It often feels like I'm not only listening, but like I'm there and present with you. You two truly inspire me that if I really want to, I can do whatever I want, speaking mostly about creating a podcast. A few months ago, I truly hated physics because of school, but now I actually kind of like it. I loved a lot of episodes, but my favorite was the one about spacesuits. You guys are really cool, and I'm glad that I found your podcast. Here in Slovakia, I couldn't find any podcast that would actually be interesting, so I gave up and started scrolling and found you. I can't explain in words how it felt to listen to the first few episodes. I was like, no way that I didn't find this earlier. And if she could have any episode, she would want one on Bluetooth. So,
ooh, that's awesome.
I would love an episode on Bluetooth, to be honest, because if that isn't magic, I don't know what is. You know?
That is beyond me.
Anyway, thanks Adele for writing in, and I'll tell you what, I will be a true fan of Adele's podcast once that actually launches. And what's funny, if we're going to stay in line with this episode, Adele, you are both thinking about starting that episode and editing your first.
And receiving millions of followers.
You're receiving countless awards. So good luck to you on your podcast. I'd like to thank T.O., who makes the music for our show, including our break stuff and our intro stuff. He's super awesome. You should check out his other stuff on Spotify. You can find it in the description. He makes something for everyone. You should go take a listen. I'm glad that he chose to work with us. He's a very genuine guy. Undecided next topic for our next episode. I'm just glad to be in the studio again, finally. I feel very lucky and very blessed to be here. So thanks for coming on, Nate.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to genuinely get confused.
We'll be in touch, guys. Make sure to check out our Instagram to never miss out on all of our updates. You can find that at the link in the description of this episode. Peace out.
Peace.
Ignition sequence starts. 3, 2, 1. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.